Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I've moved into the postseason here, with or without the Ravens, and I've decided to go with the playoff beard. Luke Jones joins us now, all courtesy of our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. We move into a new year. Make sure you're getting your gas and getting your fried chicken and your Western fries, and certainly the coffee. And Luke, you and I are probably going to spend some time together here later on in the month talking about offseason and the Ravens and media and Super Bowl and postseason and the Steelers making the playoffs somehow late into the night on Sunday night. But for now, let's just try to stay to what we saw on Sunday, because I think there's time to pick up all the pieces of Humpty Dumpty and put the scrambled eggs together when it's all over with. But once again, they almost won. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, week after week after week, and they lose six games in a row. I've witnessed a lot with Ravens football. I've never seen a period like this. This is a very, very unusual time for where the owner is, where the coach is, where the quarterback is, where the contract is. It's just a very, very strange time to be letting the Pittsburgh Steelers, amidst 25,000 Steelers fans circling the stadium. And it turns out it's not even Roethlisberger's last game. Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, imagine that. But I think, first of all, you just look at the sheer length of the losing streak, and you have to go back to the end of 2007, the end of Brian Billick's tenure as head coach. Different circumstances, because, I mean, that, you think back to the Patriots Monday night game, but overall, that was just really bad football. I mean, they were losing games. They were losing by a lot. Steve McNair was long gone and hurt at that point. The secondary was decimated. As much as they had the great effort against the Patriots, there were some bad performances in there too. And I think it's where you look back at this six-game losing streak, and certainly you look at the Cincinnati game the day after Christmas. That was a blowout. But you also look at the roster, decimated by injuries, yes. That's clearly going to be something we've talked about it all year, but the COVID situation for that game specifically as well. But other than that, you look at the other five losses of those six, and a combined 8 points they came by. I mean, you're talking about a 1 point loss, a 2 point loss, a 1 point loss, a 1 point loss, and a 3 point loss. And one, it speaks to the nature of the NFL quite often, where you are talking about close games, but I still go back to where they were when they were 8-3, Nestor. I mean, going back to that win over Cleveland, where, remember, it was kind of a dubious win historically when, Lamar had thrown four picks and, I didn't have a whole lot of offense. I mean, it was Elias or Stats Inc. or one of those had said that was a kind of a miraculous win.
Very ugly victories along those eight. There were only a couple of really impressive ones.
And that's where I think, as you try to navigate this, and again, we'll focus on Sunday as much as we can, but let's face it, they had a 3% chance going into Sunday's game of making the playoffs. Miami ended up winning anyway. So even if they win that game, they didn't even get to the Sunday night scenario as far as wanting the Raiders to win and all of that.
It still brought more drama than maybe I thought it was going to bring when I woke up on Sunday morning. I'd say that.
Sure. Well, I mean, the one consolation is that the Indianapolis Colts, all over themselves. I mean, if you want some kind of consolation for Pittsburgh going to the playoffs, it's that Indy did not. So hang on a second.
I just need to interject that when I think of that scenario, I think of Bob Irsay getting off of the helicopter at the Gator Bowl back in 1979, sort of historically, that the Colts were going to go to Jacksonville. And every time we've ever had David Lamb on or any of the old Jacksonville historians, the Stedmans of Jacksonville would tell you that. And I thought that, as much as we've been through it with Jacksonville and the franchise and 30 years later and all of that, to get some aid there would have been interesting. And as it turns out, it only helped Pittsburgh and hurt the Chargers.
Yeah, no question about it. But it's what you just said. I mean, this movie had played out week after week down the stretch here. And again, when they were 8-3, I can vividly remember us, and it wasn't that long ago. I mean, that's what's kind of crazy about this, right? They go from 8-3 to 8-9, just like that. But you and I at 8-3 or 7-3 were talking about this and saying, really don't know if this team's that good. And I think that's where, when you're trying to process this, trying to process what's happened over these last 6 weeks, first of all, let's be very clear. Let's take a step back before we start talking about pressing the nuclear button and firing this guy, firing that guy, getting rid of this coach, getting rid of that player. This team lost its best defensive player in Marlon Humphrey on the final touchdown, final Pittsburgh touchdown at Heinz Field. Lost him for the season on that game-winning touchdown. They lose that game in heartbreaking fashion, of course, to go for two, go for the win. And then a quarter later, going to the following week in Cleveland, about a quarter later, they lose Lamar Jackson for the rest of the season. Let's take a step back and just think about that right now. A team that already had so many injuries, a team that already had question marks. And look, they were 8-3. They had won six straight one-score games. We were talking about those things. You know, you and I were not sitting here talking about this team in terms of thinking they were a very serious Super Bowl contender. We were talking about the record looking really good and the fact that they had cushion, but we knew they had some issues and we knew they had a difficult schedule remaining. So you lose your best defensive player, even if Marlon Humphrey wasn't having his best season, and we can certainly acknowledge that. You lose that game against Pittsburgh, you fall to 8-4, and then the first play of the second quarter in Cleveland the following week, you lose your franchise quarterback. And I get it. Lamar Jackson wasn't playing his best football, but you take a step back and you lose your best player on both sides of the ball. Are we really that stunned then that things did not go well down the stretch?
Well, this became a bad football team. I mean, very, very, I mean, it, you know, literally a team that was scraping and hanging in games or whatever, but a bad football team. They're 0-6, dude. I mean, I'm not slicing that any other way. Like, I had some jack wagon out on the internet. Imagine that, Luke. Take umbrage with the fact that I would call them a bad football. To me, the Steelers look like a bad football team, too, even though they're going to be playing next weekend. If the Ravens had to go and play with the team that they fielded on Sunday, they might win three games. And I tweeted that. And I don't know if I'm being generous or not, given where Cleveland is at this point, and Cincinnati is, and Pittsburgh is, and that there's no gimmies out there. That's not a very good football team. I mean, just be honest. I mean, even if they would have squeaked in and somehow won on Sunday, and the gods of Miami would have come together, and you know, whatever, they're not very good as comprised.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, 3-win team, 4-win team, 5-win team, whatever it is, not very good, right? That's clear. Not historically terrible, because they did compete, and they, you know, it's not as though they were losing in the fashion that they did to the Bengals every week down the stretch.
And by the way, Snoop Huntley, you know, for warts and all that, better than Spurgeon Wynn, better than like Bill Troop, better than, I mean, I can give you a thousand backup guys who gave us no chance to win ever. Yeah. My God, I mean, dude gave him a chance to win every week, but he's the backup quarterback, man.
Well, and that's the big key. And that's where some people, and I understood, because Lamar hadn't been playing his best football from about the Minnesota game on. Even if you want to go back to after the Indianapolis game, he hadn't touched greatness in that same way. And it had his issues throwing the football much more so than we saw the first 5 weeks of the season. But that's where you see the difference between a franchise quarterback, a former league MVP, and we can debate where Lamar ranks among the greats, but he's been among the absolute best quarterbacks in the league the last 3 years. I mean, it's just that's where he's been. So you have your backup quarterback, who, mind you, is a second-year undrafted rookie who's still learning his craft, who played admirably, but as he plays more and more, teams are focusing on him more and more rather than just the Ravens offense or preparing for Lamar to potentially play, and deficiencies in his game are exposed. Then I think he fit perfectly what you're realistically looking for in a backup quarterback.
I was going to call him Johnny Bravo. I mean, you know, he was a guy that fits the part, you know, that could run scout team and run around, and you hope to God you don't have to play him. You hope he doesn't have to play. And if he has to play, what could he do and what could he do well? My God, it felt like Superman. That's why I tweeted out the Snoop Dogg Superman tweet on Sunday, because I thought, like, man, maybe he's got some Superman in him. Maybe he's going to beat Ben Roethlisberger here in Baltimore, zigging and zagging and making a pass. And damn if he almost didn't, right? I mean, other than the mistakes that are the dagger that get you killed, that get you blown up as a quarterback in the league. The pick across the middle, right?
Well, I mean, and it just came down to it. He helped win them a game in Chicago. And certainly he had a couple other, played well against Green Bay. He played well in relief at Cleveland after Lamar gets hurt early in the second quarter. But generally speaking, and this is where I always go back to my philosophy on backup quarterbacks. One, I'm not going to spend a bunch of money on a backup quarterback. I always talk about the famous Tom Moore line about Peyton Manning in Indy, where I think it was John Gruden asked him, why doesn't the backup quarterback get more reps? And Tom Moore in his, gravelly way said, son, we don't practice being bleeped around here. When 18 goes down, we're in trouble. That's obviously a funny example. And look, I'm not saying a backup quarterback isn't important, but the reality is you have your franchise quarterback, a league MVP who goes down and he misses roughly a third of the season. What do you think is going to happen on top of all the injuries they had already suffered over the course of the year?
Well, we never had to learn about John Beck or Matt Schaub or who was the guy from the Rams? Mark Bulger was a bad guy.
Yeah, never played for the Ravens.
Never played, right? I mean, none of these guys ever played, and they were all around. We never had to learn or make them popular. Somehow Snoop Huntley got popular around here the last couple of weeks, but probably not so popular in the end when you look up and you say, oh, yeah, they didn't win when he played, right? Literally, they didn't win when he played.
Well, and really, you look at the last 2 weeks. I mean, as well as he played overall, as surprisingly as he played overall, he did not play very well against the Rams, and then turns the ball over three times on Sunday. The interception in the end zone to start the fourth quarter was an absolute backbreaker. I think that's that from that moment on, a game that it felt like the Ravens were going to win. I think people were feeling really good about that, especially the way Latavius Murray had been running the football. But he throws that pick, especially you go back and look at the replay. Rashad Bateman looked like he was clear and open towards the far side of the end zone. And instead, he tries to force it to Mark Andrews, and it gets picked. And from that point on, I don't know about you, and maybe this is me being way too negative, felt like they were going to lose that football game. That felt damning right there. And that's not to say it was over at that point. And certainly, they forced overtime and had some opportunities, but you just can't do that. And, I mean, whether it's Tyler Huntley, whether it's Ben Roethlisberger, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's Joe Flacco, any quarterback who throws a pick in that spot, in that situation, it's not good. And that's where I think the good vibes about the way he had played, and we even talked about it after that Green Bay game, and I even wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, not to suggest a quarterback controversy, but I was hoping, assuming Lamar Jackson was going to get back on the field before the season ended, I was hoping that would be a little bit of a wake-up call for him to kind of maybe spark him to get going because he hadn't been playing well. But, it just comes down to it. You're missing your best player. You're missing your, at least theoretical best player on the other side of the ball, especially in a secondary that had already sustained some key losses, even before the season started in the case of Marcus Peters. But they just weren't quite good enough. And you look at these games when you're losing by 3 points or losing by 1 point or 2 points or 3 points, it comes down to one play. Can you make a big play? And you think about the way this league works for most of the teams. I'm not talking about where the Ravens were 2 years ago, where they were this dominant outfit, greatest team in the regular season history of the franchise. But most of the teams in the league that are either not great or not totally terrible are usually playing close games. So in those close games, what do you need? You need your stars to make plays. Well, the Ravens had a couple stars out there, and Mark Andrews and a couple guys here and there, but most of their stars weren't playing. And the difference makers that you're counting on in crunch time were not out there. And even look at the end of the game where Jimmy Smith, a 33-year-old version of Jimmy Smith, was out there being asked to make key plays in spots where you expect Marlon Humphrey or Marcus Peters to be out there. And it's just the reality of where the Ravens were. They weren't good enough. It's not to say that they were horrendous or that they embarrassed themselves losing by three touchdowns every week over the last 6 weeks of the season, but it just came down to it. They weren't a very good football team, and they competed, they fought. I don't think it was ever a question of effort or wanting to win, but you just look at the list of guys that they were missing by the end of the season, you know, really from the start of the season all the way to the end, that attrition was just unrelenting over the course of the year. And again, you come down to not having Lamar Jackson in December, not having Marlon Humphrey in December. If someone tells you that in July, on top of the other injuries they have, that's where 8-9 probably doesn't sound so bad, doesn't sound so shocking. It's just the order and how this played out, going from 5-1, you know, not just 8-3, but remember 5-1 to 8-9.
5-1, what's that, a 92% to make the play? 96? It's probably some crazy number, right?
I mean, it's high. I mean, I don't know where it is exactly, but it's high. And, you know, you start 5-1 and then you finish 3-8. I mean, that's territory the Ravens have not found themselves in very often since the beginning of the franchise, really. So I think the key, and I've said this before, I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, not focusing on the game so much, because I don't know about you. You and I spoke about this in terms of we weren't expecting them to make the playoffs and certainly wasn't expecting Indianapolis to lose to Jacksonville, but it ended up not mattering anyway in that sense. So you kind of just look at...
I did get my tummy tickled for a moment. Didn't you? Right? Just a moment, right?
I mean, you're certainly thinking it's possible. Sure. I mean, the way that, not just that Indianapolis lost, but they lost in spectacular fashion.
Yeah, every time
fashion.
They're doing cut in, something awful's happening to Carson Wentz and something good is happening to the Jaguars. And it was like a big party down there, you know?
Yeah, right. Well, the story was fans were coming in clown masks and everything. I mean, that's how bad it was.
You know, I'm going to check in with all my Jacksonville peeps because, I mean, as the original Free the Birds guy, you know, I want some evidence. I want to see pictures. I need to know what, right. I need receipts to know what was going on down there.
Well, I guess they said that there was a plane flying over the stadium that had a Clown Town banner or something like that. I thought I saw, but it just comes down to, I mean, the Ravens just weren't good enough down the stretch. And I think we had kind of, you know, we were speaking about this as though it were over after the Rams game. And they ended up having the door open a little bit wider than you would have thought, but it was still slammed shut by Miami in the late afternoon.
I almost want to give you the more playoffs. I mean, you know, there's really no thought there, really.
Well, and I would also even say, having watched this game, 3-3 at halftime, you know, my first half takeaway was, these two teams still have a chance for the playoffs, but this is what happens when you expand the playoff field, as the league did a year ago, and you have a 17th game that you add. I mean, season, and sure, they would have played Pittsburgh prior to week 18 if it had only been a 16-game schedule, so you never know
Dude,
what's going to happen.
I'm laughing out loud because you know I'm about to start calling it super, super wild card weekend.
Yeah. Oh, and let's be
Sunday,
clear.
Sunday to Saturday, Mondays.
and let's be clear. We'll watch it. I mean,
of course
as much
we're
as
gonna watch it.
I mean, we'll watch
my
it.
Schedule. Who's sure. not gonna watch Pittsburgh playing Kansas City on Sunday night? Not
which
me.
Which I'd have to think that game's gonna be ugly. It has to be, right? I mean, although Kansas City didn't look great against Denver, so you never know.
Oh, I think Bill Belichick going to Buffalo. We've got storylines. You are live. Even Brent Musburger will be in Cincinnati, man. It's all good.
Right, right. But for the Ravens, I think, and I said this last week, I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com, the key to this offseason, and hey, you lose 6 games in a row, it's a different kind of feeling than 4th-and-12 against Cincinnati 4 years ago. But when you lose 6 in a row, that's enough to break anyone in terms of you don't know what Steve Bisciotti's thinking. You don't know what Eric DaCosta's thinking. You don't know what John Harbaugh's thinking. So that does lead to some potentially interesting days ahead. Not to say that it's going to go crazy, but could a guy lose his job that you're not expecting? You know, could it be Greg Roman? I don't know.
By the way, you know what? That's a good jumping off point because I'd love to just dive into that with you because that's really what people want anyway, right? Like in the aftermath of all this. Luke is here. We're going to get some Royal Farms chicken. I want to give a special shout out to Doug Workman and my friends from Liberty Pure Solutions who have helped me with some fresh water, well water, plumbing water, hot water, water everywhere. Liberty Pure Solutions. I'll be telling you more about them all year long. They are an annual sponsor of ours and have done some great work. Luke, I want to hold that thought because I'm going to be going after that with Don Moeller and Jeff Moeller. I'm going to be getting the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by the Maryland Lottery. Not doing it. I'm hiatusing right now. I'm still carrying out at Nacho Mama's. I was over at Costas the other day. I got my booster shot and I got a beer and some of that special penicillin that they put in the crab soup there, and the cream of crab soup and the regular crab soup, trying to keep the COVID away. But Luke and I are going to be after this all off season. I'm not sure if we're going to get to the Super Bowl next month. I hope that we're going to get there. But either way, lots of off season comings and goings for the Ravens. Stay with us. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. You can find him at Baltimore Luke out on the internet. You can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. We're both out on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and podcasting. And always at WNST AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, where we never stop talking Baltimore positive.